This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we're on live here, both on Instagram and on Pet Life Radio. Thanks for joining me here this wonderful Sunday morning, nice and clear here in L.A. Way to get a hold of me is easily. You can always just, if you're here listening to this live on Pet Life Radio, then you're already here. For those of you who are just listening and not here, you can always call in 877-385-8882. Once again, 877-385-8882. Here on Instagram, all you need to do is type in your question. We're already starting to talk on something right now. Hello, Steve. Enjoy your last day of being 69. So anyway, so just ask anything you want, and we're here to talk about it, here for you, here for your pets. So while we were getting the show started here on Instagram, we did get a question about eye boogers, very, very scientific. And so basically, if it's just eyes, this could be secondary respiratory infection. But if there's no other signs of respiratory infection, I just treat it topically, just with some sort of ophthalmic antibiotic. If there's also a lot of conjunctivitis, redness, irritation, and there's a fluorescein stain negative, meaning no corneal involvement, then I would also put them on an antibiotic, triple antibiotic with a little cortisone. But now with tonsillitis at the same time, so that might be some sort of bacterial problem going on more systemically. So in that case, I would also start some antibiotics. You know, just a good oral antibiotic, doxycycline, Clavamox works really well. Tonsillitis in dogs, like in people, we don't necessarily run to remove them. Now, if I am working on a BOAS, which is the breathing problem, the brachycephalic, right? That is the obstructive airway syndrome, BOAS. Then I'm going to probably remove the tonsils because those are contributing probably to the dog's difficulty breathing. But if, in fact, it's just a regular breed, doesn't usually have problem, has been fine up till now, and it's just an inflamed tonsil, I would start my antibiotics and see how we do. Hello, Janice. Hello, Martineau. So anyway, you know, if it persists, however, then you definitely want to have it checked out. Maybe there's something else going on. Maybe then, yes, start antibiotics for sure, and we'll go from there. Another question. When should a puppy be spayed? Wait for the first heat or not? I love that question. All right, let's go backwards. A long time ago, we used to say, let's spay them before their first heat. Why? Because there was a statistic that if you spay a dog prior to a first heat, you can virtually eliminate the threat of breast cancer, mammary cancer in the dog, which is 7 to 10 times more prevalent in dogs than it is in women. And maybe probably just because the number of mammary glands, but there's no doubt about it. It's a problem. But so there was like a 98% reduction in the incidence of mammary cancer in dogs if spayed prior to the first heat. However, if you let them have one heat, but then spay them after the first heat, but before the second, very important. Now, the first heats usually come, depending on which book the dog read, 7 months of age, and then every 7 months thereafter. I see a lot of dogs that have delayed first heats. We used to think it was a silent heat, but then when they show all of a sudden coming to heat at 11, 12, 13 months, we realize even if it was on schedule 7, 14, it was probably just a delayed first heat and not a quote-unquote silent heat. So if you spay them before their second heat, the risk reduction drops to about 90, 88 to 90%. Still pretty darn good. If, however, she has that second heat or a litter on the first heat, there is zero risk reduction. So it's not like it's slowly, slowly, slowly. It is 98 to maybe 90 to 88 to zero. So yes, you want to spay before that second heat. Now, what are the advantages of letting them have one heat? Well, first of all, there are other cancers that there seem to be statistically greater incidence in dogs at young that were spayed very young before that first heat. And also other problems with the urinary incontinence as older dogs that seem to be estrogen responsive. Well, God, that's a medication called Incurin, for example, which we often have to use. I don't like using it as my first. I would rather use phenylpropanolamine or Proin as my first line of defense, because the whole idea of spaying them is to get rid of the estrogen, and now you're giving them estrogen. So it's counterproductive for other things. However, it will help stop. So wait a second. If all of a sudden they're responsive to estrogen, maybe it's because we remove the estrogen influence too young. So therefore, it is felt now, most of us feel that they should have their first teat. Now let's talk to a large breed, different problem. There was a study that came out. It was actually a study on Rottweilers. They were studying just Rottweilers aging. They wanted to know all the things that can happen. Rotties have, you know, their issues. And like, interesting statistic, in the Rottweilers that were pre-pubertally neutered, there was a 65% greater incidence in long bone cancer as adult dogs. In those that were pre-pubertally spayed, there was a 35% increase. So now we have a whole different cancer, nothing to do with reproductive tract, and we're noticing bone cancer. So now I extrapolated that, many of us have. Why Rottweilers? No, it's not now. It's any large breed, any dog that is subjected to getting osteosarcoma, bone cancer, which are mostly the large breeds, obviously it would be the same. At least where I'm banking, it's the same. Therefore, now with large breed dogs, 100% we're waiting. In fact, when it comes to neutering, I won't even neuter them until a year and a half. Maybe even the giant breeds, even two, because there's no downside. They take much longer to mature, and therefore that might be they take longer to mature, but then their age per year is faster than small breeds. So anyway, that's kind of my feeling. That's my take on it. And you know, if you have any more questions, you can reach out to me. Let's see, a little Malshi, I guess a Maltese Shih Tzu mix, throws up white foamy liquid, something to do with some, you know, a lot of dogs will do this. Sometimes it's just a phlegm. Sometimes it's early in the morning if it's a hack, but in every other way, they're totally perfect. Eating, running, blah, everything's the same. Then I'm less concerned. If other things are going on at the same time, then yes, I might be more concerned. Hello. What do I use for a cat, age 8, that has asthma inhaler, but I'm not sure. Okay. So first of all, there's something when you're using any kind of inhaler for a cat, which by the way, is not a bad idea. You want to use something, it's called AeroCat, AeroKat. It's a device that you can put on and that if whatever inhalers you're going to use, there's some that are steroids. There's some that are bronchodilators. Talk to your veterinarian. Some use a combination of both. The ones that are steroids seem to work a little bit better. But sometimes in the midst of a problem, you want to use one of the bronchodilators like albuterol at the same time. So I recommend getting them both. And also make sure that first you have to get a diagnosis. So take x-rays. Sometimes there are oral bronchodilators like theophylline that are used. Sometimes there are oral steroids or injectable steroids for cats that seem to work well, methylprednisone. So, and different cats will respond differently to the medication. So therefore, you want to make sure that you've spoken to your veterinarian and there are a number of things that can be done, a number of things you can try and see what works best. And even within the same cat, sometimes one will work a little better than another. So it's not a slam dunk, but there are definitely ways to control it. If you're going to use any type of inhaler, you want to get an AeroCat. It's like this little thing that goes over the face that covers their nose and their mouth. And then you put the inhaler, it's really cool. Not that expensive. And as I said, if you have an asthmatic cat, you want to use it. All right. While you guys are coming up, there are a couple of things I wanted to talk about. All right. So one is holidays. Okay. We're here. Holiday time. The do's and don'ts. Just be really careful. Decorations. Let's talk about the tree itself. You know, when you see that tree with all those glass or those hard plastic balls. Well, if you have a Labrador Retriever or any hunting dog that loves to chase balls, they're in heaven. They look at that tree, they go, oh my God, this is going to be great. Look at all those balls I can chase. And they will try to eat them. They will jump up and they bite down on them. Not good. Anything, all the stringy, the tinsel, stuff like that, that also could be a problem, especially with cats. They like to play with that stuff. How about cords, electrical cords? Make sure they're covered well, like under a carpeting or something, so there's none exposed. Or you can get Christmas tree lights that don't work off of 120 volts. They work off of a 12-volt transformer. So if the dog or cat or bunny, if you have bunnies floating around the house because they love chewing on cords, then they're only getting a 12-volt shot. It's like, you know, how we used to test a 9-volt battery and stick it on your tongue and you get the little buzz. So it's not going to hurt them. They'll feel a little zap, but it's not going to be like 120 volts. So that's an option. If you have a tree that's like fresh in a water, as the water seeps down and fills up that little bowl at the bottom, there could be also some toxins or molds that can be there. So again, you want to be careful about that. All the gifts, the ribbons, the wrapping, again, these are all concerns. With candles, you know, interesting about cats. Cats are smart. They really are, but they love the flickering light of a candle and they may come up to it and tap it. And if not burn themselves, may knock the candle over. Again, you should never have lit candles in a room without some sort of adult human supervision when you have animals around. period. That's the rule of thumb. So don't even think about it. It's, you got to be there or blow the candles out. Very simple. Foods. Well, we talked about the same of all the holiday foods. It's the fatty foods. It's the nuts. It's the raisins. It's the grapes. It's the sugar-free stuff with xylitol. It's the onions. It's the fresh onions, raw garlic. All of these things can have an impact. Super fatty foods. So again, it's all about, it's exercising common sense. It's pretty simple. So you want to watch those things as well. And other than that, if you're going to have a lot of company over, if you have dogs that freak out, cats that freak out, make sure they have a safe room, someplace where they can sort of escape to. But again, it's all for fun and you want to include them. And also when you're giving out gifts, give your pets a gift too. Give them something they can have for them that they can eat, like a treat, a toy that they can play with, a chew bone. You want to include them in the festivities as well. And it'll be, trust me, it'll be much appreciated. They'll like you for it. So these are all ideas. The other thing I wanted to talk about, well, also cold weather tips and holiday travel. So when we come back from our brief break, we will only burning natural candles. You know, some of the candles, that's a good question. Yeah, obviously the natural, the soy wax, beeswax, etc., they don't give off any kind of toxic odor, so they may be safer, but still I'm concerned about just the candle itself. Again, there's a danger involved, and it could be a really bad danger if they knock it over and it starts a fire. But they don't get that close to it that they might pick up that scent if there is something toxic in the air from the candle. But I mean, look, there's no downside, of course, to using something that's more natural. Anyway, time for our quick break, and we'll be back after these few short messages from our sponsors.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We're back live here on Pet Life Radio. And of course, during the break, we were just chatting a little bit. Someone asked me about celebrity clients. And there are, but as I said, it's no big deal. Then we talked about a new drug that it's just started testing, a 4-year trial before it even gets presented to the FDA. It's a longevity drug. They say it can add 2 to 3, 4 years of healthy lifespan, healthy years to our dogs. So that's going to be very interesting. Slow down the aging process. I don't know how it works. I don't know anything about it. If it works, I'm going to take it as well. So who knows? But anyway, I also wanted to talk about travel tips for the holidays. And that is that a lot of you, if not already, I know my son and his wife and kids are driving up north to be with her family for New Year's. And, you know, it's, I would say this, when you're going to go someplace, first of all, make sure you're if you're traveling by car, that your pet can handle it. They've done it before. If you know they don't, you want to give medication, something that calms them down. Ample stops along the way if it's going to be a long car ride. So these are just things you need to do. Secondly, water. If you're going like out of state or out of different municipalities, I recommend starting with a big gallon or 5-gallon jug of water. You give water at the stops, maybe even some in the car, depending on what kind of car you have. If you have a bowl that can handle the water, a spill-proof bowl. And the key is that every stop, you want to fill back to the top with the local water. And then the next stop, you've used some, fill with the local water. That way, it is slowly reintroducing a local water, but into a large volume of the water they're used to at home. And that might just prevent some issues. Make sure you have enough food with you, your medication for the dog, if they are on medication, ID, microchip, collar, picture of the dog, et cetera. These are the things you should always have. Vaccine records, et cetera. Now, if you are traveling and going someplace other than family, first of all, if you're going to go see visit family, make sure they know you're coming with the dog, or else it might be the last time you're ever invited. And make sure the dog's behaved well, or else it's going to be the last time you're ever invited. But if you're going to stay at a hotel, don't, you know, oh, we're dog friendly. And then you show up with your 65-pound doodle. No, we have a limit. It's a 35-pound limit. I'm sorry, we can't have a big dog. Well, you better know that beforehand. So if there are any kind of restrictions, whether it's breed restriction, size restriction, make sure you know it before you show up. Make sure you know when you make the reservation, get something in writing that it's okay. And that's what you want to get. It's just about, you know, be prepared. And then the same stuff, picture and ID and all the medication you may need extra. If they're on special diet, bring enough, bring extra, because you never know what's going to happen with travel. If things are going to get delayed, et cetera, et cetera. So therefore, you just, again, want to, you want to make it very convenient for you. But the goal is, and I say this sometimes, oh, by the way, you're going to need health certificates if you're traveling by train or by plane. So make sure you have that. You need to see your veterinarian, get health certificates, find out what states. Some states need them. Airlines. Some airlines want an official APHIS. That's the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service. Then you might need to get it's called the APHIS 7001 form. Some just need a little something that they will send you, like United American. They have their own form. It's just saying, yes, we have the rabies. Here's the rabies date. Have the rabies certificate signed by the veterinarian, and you're good to go. Service dogs. Remember, emotional support dogs are not really accepted anymore. It has to be a legitimate service dog. So again, make sure you're cool there too. We don't want surprises. If the dog has to be traveling down below in cargo, make a big deal about it. Like, you know, they say they're pressurized. They are most likely, but always let them know there's a live dog down below. And if they are freaking out, make sure you give them something for a travel sedative, an anti-anxiety, some medication, something before the travel, just so they're cool. Okay. Any questions? Raise your hands, ask away. Otherwise, we'll move on to the next thing. All right. So next, cold weather tips. You know, it's getting cold. I was in Atlanta last weekend, as many of you know, and Friday morning, we got in Thursday, late afternoon, we visited some good friends of mine that moved to Atlanta from LA, and he and I got up to go get some coffee Friday morning, and 31 degrees, it was cold, and I didn't realize it. Atlanta, you know, when you think Atlanta, I think Florida. No, I think Louisiana. No, not the same. It gets cold. Apparently, it's like 1,000 feet up. So it's there's some elevation there too. But I mean, it turned out during the day, it hit like in the high 50s, low 60s, and it was sunny sky, beautiful. But man, was it cold. So there are places right now in the Northeast, in the North, that are very, very cold. And I mean, a lot of dogs love snow, which is great. But you know, you get to Chicago where there's not only the cold weather, but also a tremendous wind chill factor. So it can get down to certainly below zero. You're up in Canada. It gets really, really cold. So anyway, you got to be prepared. So make sure if you leave your pets outside that they have ample protection from the wind, from so like some sort of dog house or an awning, something that is three or four sides that actually protects them from wind chill. Secondly, if it's really freezing out there, they have to be able to move. Even an Arctic dog, an Arctic breed, just sitting still is not good. You can keep them inside when it's really cold like that. Keep them inside. It's safer, better for them. They will enjoy it, and it's less dangerous. Now, what about water? They need to have water at all times. Well, if it's really cold out there, then what's going to happen is some of that water is going to melt. I mean, freeze. Then they just have a huge block of ice. So there are water bowls out there that have, it's like they're double ply with them in that antifreeze stuff in that center, in that middle area between the two sides of the bowl. So that way or at the bottom of the bowl. So that will also help prevent from freezing. There are some bowls out there that can actually are warming bowls, not that they keep the water warm, they just prevent it from freezing. So you got to be creative. Look around, see what you got. But the really key is if you can leave them inside, you want to leave them inside. Now, what about sweaters? Now, it's so funny how people see these little dogs, all these cute, you know, sweaters. And yes, alkaline water is fine, 100%. But again, and if left outside, it can freeze. Don't shave your dogs down. Obviously, this is the winter coat. It's there for a reason. Even during the summer, I recommend not shaving them down. But that's another story. We can talk about that when it gets hot again. But no, leave their coat. But they want to be well brushed. In order for a coat to do its job, which is regulating body temperature, it has to be a healthy coat. So make sure that you brush them, keep the coat clean, and that's very important. So back to sweaters and jackets for dogs. So interestingly, the dogs that are at most risk, greater risk of really freezing, frostbite, are going to be ones that are small breeds because their surface area in relation to their weight is greater. Therefore, they will have the ability to lose more of their own body temperature to the outside. So when you see that cute little Chihuahua or Pomeranian wearing that ugly, sweater or jacket, don't laugh. Don't laugh. It's really there for a reason. It's good for them. They should be wearing it. Even some medium-sized dogs, they get cold. They really do. I used to joke about it. No, there's scientific evidence that they really could use some sort of covering, a jacket, a sweater, if they're going to be outside for long periods of time. How about the feet? Remember, feet exchange, a lot of heat and cold exchange through the pads. So dogs that are on that very ice cold pavement or ice, if they're walking, if you live in an area that everything is iced down, that could be a problem. Give them booties. Let them wear some booties and to protect them from the cold. Now, a lot of the booties that are all like a leather, they don't breathe well. So you only have them on it for the walk. And the booties do another thing. A lot of municipalities will de-ice sidewalks and streets using salt. That salt can, or some chemical that could be very irritative to the pads. So it's not only you want to have them to protect them from the cold, but you want to protect them from the chemicals that may be laid down to de-ice some of these surfaces, like, as I said, sidewalks and streets. So booties are really also a good idea during this really, really cold weather. There's so many options out there. So think about that. If it's too cold for you, it's probably going to be too cold for your dog. Now, could they withstand temperatures colder than you can? Yes, they can. But what do you do when you get really cold? You put on a jacket or a sweater. It's the same thing with dogs. And are you colder when you're moving or colder when you're standing still? Clearly, we know the answer is when you're standing still. Same with dogs. So if you're going to have them outside and they don't have room to move and run around, then maybe not a good idea to keep outside. There are also really good space heaters that are very safe that you can hang out of their reach. So if you do have like a tent or some enclosure for your dog outside, like a dog house or something like it, or a dog shed, you can also keep it warm by these space heaters. So I think that covers everything. All right. So for all of you that celebrate, have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas tomorrow, tonight and tomorrow. And I will be here next week. Mark, are we here next week? Next Sunday? New Year's Eve? Yeah, I'm here. New Year's Eve. Nothing major planned. Just lots of football. So we be here next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. If you can, okay, make sure that you send me any questions you have during the week or save them and ask me live here on Pet Life Radio, here on Instagram. So we have some really good material for you, hopefully to educate you. Have a little fun. And one last thing. I know it's going to be tough. Don't eat too much. See you next week. Bye.
Let's Talk Pets. Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.